Thanks for downloading this show from PC One. Before we get rolling, here's a word from one of the folks who helped bring you this podcast. He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What is happening, everybody? Happy Friday. Fun week we have had. I'll tell you, before we get going in the world of the free format fighting systems and boxing, I'm joined once again by one of my boxing coaches, Jamie Huey. Old Jamie's in town until Monday, I believe, so I am taking full advantage of exploiting his years of stories and experience. I tell you, I caught up on something. This is not news. This happened on, let's see, this would have happened on Wednesday, but I'm a little behind, so I kind of got caught up this morning. James Comey, FBI director, got called before the Senate, and I just thought the whole thing was interesting. First off, I thought he did a very good job, and I thought that the Senate did a very good job of being hard on him and asking the tough questions. Now, don't forget, I'm an analyst, so I'm breaking down his performance and their performance, possibly even in front of the content that they both provided. But I did think that I thought that he was very forthcoming to a degree, and I thought that they were also very tough on him to a degree. Which is what that was supposed to be. Here was the thing for me. And I say this to you as a conservative, but I'm a fair and objective conservative. I don't just take anything that the conservative side does and just say, well, they're right. They're wrong all the time. All the time they're wrong. And a lot of what James Comey was up there for had to do with Hillary Clinton and her email. You guys remember that scandal? I never got that from Jump Street. I was confused what the big deal was there from the very jump. She had multiple emails. So what? What's that got to do with anything? When this had come forward and the server and she had been hacked and it wasn't secure, she turned her emails over, but she deleted 33,000 of them. Well, that wasn't great. To be great, she would have just turned them all in. So that wasn't great. That added fuel against her. Had that not happened, I think this whole thing would have been pretty smooth sailing, where she would have said, yeah, I got a few emails accounts and I use multiple devices and we got this server and I'm not a technology person, but this is how it's set up. And don't forget, Hillary Clinton works 18 hours a day, 7 days a week for very little pay and absolutely zero thanks. I mean, this was just a hardworking woman that used devices and forms of communication such as email. So they said, well, look, this wasn't secure, and a person in your position should have known about this. Well, okay, fair enough. That's a good point. But that's a point that she conceded to. You know, she kind of said, look, I'm not fully up to speed on technology, and I guess I could have done some checks and balances, and I'd certainly do it differently knowing now. Well, that answer's good for me. I don't expect her to be infallible. She's not the Pope. She was the Secretary of State. That answer worked for me, and I'm on the other side of the aisle. I'm looking for things that could stumble her up. I just couldn't do it on this. Just didn't care. Because I didn't get it. And so they said, well, we know that South Korea, we know that China, we know that Russia has hacked those emails and that they have it. Here's what I need from the listeners. Go to audibletrial.com/Chael. Audible has, these guys have like 200,000 different shows and books, and they got comedy, they got podcasts, commercial free, I might add, podcasts. Go over to Audible, try them out. Go to audibletrial.com/Chael. They're going to give you, for doing that, you're going to get 30 days for free. Whatever you want to do after that, that's up to you. They're so convinced that you're going to love it, and I call it book on tape, but a lot of other things to listen to. So convinced you love it that you're going to stick around and sign up. That's up to you. But here's what I want. Here's where you guys do me a favor. I have these guys for 3 more months. In exchange for telling you about it, they gave, old Chael's got a subscription that's got about 90 days left. I want recommendations on books that are nonfiction, but they're also entertaining. I want to learn something while being entertained. Hard combination, I know. But then tweet them to me, at Chael Sonnen. I've had plenty of people do this, and I try them all the time. I got to fly a lot. I'm in my car a lot. That's what I want out of this. It's got to be nonfiction. Don't just tell me a good, entertaining book. I want it. It's got to be a true story and very entertaining. I'll listen to them. I'll come on. I'll kind of do a book report, Jamie, in exchange for people doing this for me. I'll kind of give a book report, let other listeners know what's out there. We can all learn something together. But go to audibletrial.com/Chael. Enjoy your 30 days. In exchange, send me tweet recommendations. Non-fiction. And I want to be entertained while I'm listening to it. Well, who's calling in? Is this KG?
I don't know. Either KG or... Well, I didn't give 2 pounds.
Well, let's see what's up. Somebody's calling us. Hey, this is Chael and Jamie. Who do we got here?
Ryan, FRB.
Oh, what up, FRB?
What's up, Brian?
You got... All we can hear in the background is loud... Are you in a car?
I am, yeah. How bad is it?
You know, it's pretty bad, but, I mean, we can live with it. It's FRB. What's happening?
Yeah, I'll pull over and just hang out for a while.
All right.
It's so fucking annoying. Let me find a place to pull over.
You know, if you wouldn't terribly mind, that would help. How are you, man? It's great to hear your voice.
Yeah, you too, Joel. Is there Jamie Huey with you?
Jamie Huey is in studio, man. I got him the whole week. You know, Joel left. I haven't got to talk to you, Brian. Joel left. I guess we're in a fight, but I'm not totally sure what we're fighting about. But Joel's gone, so I'm updating you. I got Jamie in here for the week. I'm taking full advantage, and now we got you on the line. So business is really picking up over here at You're Welcome.
I was about to say, man, it was about 6 months where you just kind of lost your mind. You brought Joel in, and, you know, so many people were like, I can't listen to that shit no more. What happened? What finally caused... Joel to get fired?
Well, so we'd have to get his take on it, and you know, maybe he'll call in as a guest and tell his side. I don't fully know. I mean, look, here was the thing that happened, Brian, and I'm not skating your question in the least. I'm coming at it head on, but it was a little bit bizarre for me. I didn't really understand what happened. We were in the car one day. We were headed to practice. We had a disagreement on something, but that's all it was. It wasn't, if he was right, it wouldn't have been that big of a deal. If I was right, it wouldn't have been that big of a deal. It was some small issue, but man, he was furious. And on a scale of 1 to 10, he was at a full 10. He was full on, irate. And, you know, he was screaming for about a half hour, which in fairness is a pretty damn long time to stay. I've been mad myself before, but boy, it goes down pretty quick. A half hour was just a long time to stay as angry as he was. And it was just kind of a confusing situation. It ultimately culminated with him, pulling into the parking lot at Gracie Baja, putting the vehicle in park, and, he grabbed a sack, threw some stuff in it, and left on foot. I had not seen him since. So,
wow.
Yeah, he then came to me the day of our first recording. This was Wednesday of last week, so what, about 8 or 9 days now, but on our first recording was exactly 1 week, and he came to me that day and was planning to come down in the studio. And it was like, well, Joel, I mean, when you stormed off and told me off, I took that as, you know, your departure from everything. I mean, I assume from our friendship. I mean, I haven't talked to him from whatever, as well as his participation here. And so he got a hold of me and he wanted to come down. It's like, look, number one rule, the show must go on. I can't sit around and wait and wonder if you're going to show up or not. So I made other plans. And then he was furious about that. How could you do that? And how could you slide me? And, you know, I was down there with you for a year. It's like, hey, I don't think we're disagreeing on anything. I think we fully agree, but either way, I am the one in the position of responsibility that needs to get the content done, the show organized, and this produced and put out. So it's my job to make sure the wheels go forward. I couldn't just sit around and wait on, hey, am I going to hear from Joel for the first time in a week? So, I mean, that's essentially all that happened. But there, you know, it's created some turmoil. So, I mean, it is what it is, but that's the story.
Well, you know, I mean, I think what happened, Joel expected you to contact him and to apologize. And, you know, usually, you know, you're not a guy for conflict. You know, I know you as good as anybody. You don't like fighting with people. And I think Joel probably wanted you to call him, massage him a little bit, apologize, and then everything would be back to normal. I don't think he realizes what you've done for him. Basically adopting him. He's a 50-year-old man, and you adopted him, you take care of him, you give him things that he's not appreciative of, and you've adopted a 50-year-old. I don't think he gets that.
I'll tell you, Brian, for me, that part was a little bit tough. You know, when you do that stuff, it's not just out of the goodness of your heart. I do want something back, and all I want back is appreciation, right? Everybody needs something. For me, it's appreciation. And,
You know, so I don't just do it to be nice. I do it because it makes me feel good. But there is a truth there where it's like, Joel, you're an able-bodied male in America. You know, you've got some advantages. You've got some opportunities. And, yeah, you're not my son. It's not my job to take care of you. But I am your friend, and I will help out where I can. And, yeah, when that appreciation wasn't there and it became expected – and then I became the bad guy in it. Brian, I was out a lot of money. We had a deal, and he needed it up front for certain things, and I gave it. There was a vehicle involved. His car was repossessed. Boom, I gave it. Gave him my vehicle that I wanted to drive. And I thought there would be an appreciation there. And instead, you know, I mean, I could read you or forward you some of these texts he sent. They're way too hot to read for the air in terms of the profanity. But I was the world's biggest scumbag. And it's like, wait a second. You wanted X amount. I gave it to you, and I gave it to you up front. You never fulfilled it. You needed a vehicle. I gave you mine. At one point, he was living in a home. I was picking up the bill for it. I just thought, hey, there is a level of hey, thank you for that. There's a level of that I am looking to get back. And when it didn't come, I was confused. And then, and when I came out the bad guy, I was really confused. And, you know, I don't know if it hurt my feelings or surprised me or disappointed me. I don't really know what emotion I had, but it was one of these things where I just went, well, look, I don't know that I can even argue. You know, I got a buddy, Brian, in Connecticut, and I look up to him because he's very smart. And if he tells me something, I'm going to listen. And Joel even reached out to him to, like, broker some deal between us. And it's like, Joel, I introduced you to Brian. You can't. This is a high-powered guy at a high-power law firm. He can't be in the middle of us, you know, whatever dispute we have going on out here. You can't piss in the punch bowl to a guy I introduced you to. The whole thing just got a little bit weird. It's like, look, I don't really know what to do here. I liked having him on the show. And he didn't move the number. He didn't move the needle. But I liked having him. And he was having fun. And I thought there was something there. And when he first started, Brian, and you'll know, man, he was met with resistance. People didn't get it. He didn't have a natural voice for this or, you know, a flow with the way that he would speak. It was kind of tough. But over time, he caught on and he became a character and people did begin to enjoy him. But, you know, once again, that all came back to me that I was handling it wrong, or I wasn't appreciating him the right way. However it worked, and I was just confused by the whole thing where I'm going, hey, what are we even doing here? What are we even doing here? The truth is I never asked him to be, and I don't say this to throw rocks at him, I'm just telling you a story, but I never asked him to be on the show. He was coming down here, he's an MMA fan, and we were having some big guests on, and he was kind of getting a kick out of it, hearing them, and then maybe off the air he would say a word or two to them, or, you know, however it worked, but he was just having fun. Then one day he said a word or two, and then the next day he did like a segment, and then a couple of weeks later, before I know it, we're doing the show together. And it's like, okay, well, let's have some fun with it. It was fun for me. But at the same time, behind the scenes, there was just headaches.
I just don't think he gets the arrangement. You know, there's certain guys that you bring into your circle that you sort of adopt, and they're your guys. You know, there's another guy in New York that we're not going to get into who's very similar to Joel, and he just doesn't get the arrangement that you're doing this mainly out of the goodness of your heart. And but they don't see that. They think they're in that position because you desperately need them, and that's not the case, man.
Yeah.
And I think that's always, you know, how we've always been cool, whereas like I know these cool things that you've done for me, you don't need to do them, and I've always been very appreciative of it. And you're not my father. You're not responsible for me. But I think Joel feels that you are responsible for him in some very weird way.
I think that that's right. And I'm sorry. I'm texting here. Uriah Faber is coming on the show next week to promote his match with Meow in Submission Underground. And when I reached out to Uriah, I said, "Hey, can you come on Friday?" Well, he thought that was right now. So he's calling in right now and saying, hey, your line's busy because I'm talking to you. So I was texting Uriah to let him know, actually, that's next week. Brian, I think that that's right. And I'd seen some of those patterns with him, with his own family. I believe he has 11 kids in total in his family. So he has a lot of people to reach out to. And they've always helped him for years. But it does kind of take us back to, hey, you're an able-bodied male. You could go out and fight your own fight. You know, particularly at this age, you can't just keep leaning on other people. And, you know, he would be furious with them. They would give and give and give, and there'd be some months where there just was nothing extra. They had to take care of their own families, and he would be infuriated, going to write them off and never speak to them again, and they didn't care about him and his son. And I was kind of looking at it as a bystander going, hey, man, that's no one's responsibility. Your son is your responsibility. And it does come back to he doesn't have any challenges. He's able-bodied. You know, it would be a little bit different if he was in a tough situation, perhaps. But that just isn't what's going on. And I don't mean this to be a bag on him session as much as the psychology behind it is very interesting to me. Brian, I was in Budapest with Bellator. I went on a trip for 10 days. And Joel has sent me a text message. And he was so proud, but he was trying to explain to me, hey, I need you to go somewhere and find a way to send some money. Things have been so hard. I had to work 3 days, and he was serious. You know, I worked 3 days of manual labor for cash, and he was serious. I'm going, you work 3 days? That's a weekend where I grew up. That was what my father did on his days off. We worked for three. You know, what are you talking about? That this was if you work 3 days, why don't we work five or 30 or 300? What do you 3 days? But he was serious, man. I need some help. Things have gotten so tough. I had to go work. And that was just a tough mentality for me. I mean, he's telling a country boy that. I grew up on a farm. I couldn't. There wasn't much of a sympathetic ear you were going to get from me that you had to go to work for 3 days.
Yeah. You know, I echo what you said. I don't want it to be a bag on Joel thing because, you know, when I said it was over, when I met him in Los Angeles, I meant that it was over. But I think it's just important to address because it's, you know, he's been part of your show since, I don't know, August. He's taken on a larger role. And, you know, I don't think he really appreciated it. Because, you know, he kind of gained some fans. He had some Joel, you know, 82 to 91 or whatever that line was, you know. He's got people talking about him on the forums. Why? Why does he have people talking about him? Because of you. And I don't think he gets it. I don't. What I wonder is, can he understand it? And he just doesn't want to, or is there something wrong mentally where he cannot possibly understand this?
Yeah, I fully agree with you. The psychology there was really weird, and he even shared that with me. He said, "You know, I built that show," and he said, "You can spin this any way you want. I built that show." And dedicated the last year of my life to it. And, you know, I worked my ass off. And I kind of go, Joel, I mean, look, let's just be real fair here. You're right. The show was around for a meaningful period of time. I see the numbers every single week. Brian, when you come on the show, you always ask me, hey, how'd that show do? I send you the numbers. I have the exact numbers. That's one thing about the internet. We're not like radio where we're left to guess that more people are listening at drive time than are at, you know, 2:30 in the morning. We're not left to guess. On the internet, it's an exact audit. That's why they can do a rating system. That's why when I come on and tell the fans we're at number one, we got 500,000 listeners. I know. They publish this stuff and they put it out. So that part of it can be a little bit tough when he was trying to take this credit, but he was also saying that I worked my ass off. I'm going, okay, Joel, that's actually the problem. Let's just stop right there. I am sitting on my ass right now, Brian, with a Starbucks in front of me. There is no way in any kind of make-believe land I'm going to pretend that I'm working my ass off down here. This is a very easy thing to do, and it's also fun. But if you have the mentality that we're working, our listeners are out working hard, and we're providing them with some entertainment while they do so, with a little bit of distraction, to make believe that this is a really hard thing to do, was a little bit confusing for me. I'd taken him on 3 live shows, and the first one, we got invited to go out with Richard and Frank Mir, the guys at Phone Booth Fighting. They set up the venue in Vegas and the hotel rooms. They just really took care of everything, and we went out there, and he got so drunk, he projectile vomited all over the room. He missed a business meeting. I was with Richard. We're sitting down for a business meeting to plan our strategies for the next event. He got up without even saying goodbye and walked out of that. And then we go to the airport the next day, and we can't come home because he's booked the return flight for the correct day, but 2018. We're 1 year early to go. So we got to get a cab. Can you imagine in my spot, Brian, I got to call Miss Brittany and tell her, hey, I'm staying in Vegas an extra day? I mean, how do you think that's going to go over?
Oh, a year.
Yeah, I'm staying in Vegas for another year.
I got a spot, bro. I got a house there.
Thank you. Need a room.
You know.
I appreciate that, Coach.
A year.
So, we go.
And if you told her, hey, I'm with Jamie or I'm with Brian in Las Vegas, she'd be more understanding. But when you say, hey, I'm with Joel, yeah. I can just... I just know what her reaction would have been.
Yeah, you know, so, okay, I mean, there's a little bit of funniness to that, but it's like, hey, this was your level of participation to have these things organized, and, you know, now we're getting a taxi back to the Mandalay Bay and checking in for the night, and it was just a tough thing. And we go to the second show, Dave and Buster's. We get a guaranteed site fee. They're a great sponsor for Bellator. They give us a guaranteed site fee, and he and I have an 80-20 split. And he's the one that came up with those numbers, so he was happy with it. He controlled the money, though. I showed up and did my participation. He handled the business side of it. He gave me less than 30% and said, well, the rest of it went to expenses. And, I kind of just going, okay. I mean, we have a deal that you asked for. We didn't negotiate. You came with the specific deal, the specific arrangement, and then you didn't honor it. And then he also set up we're going to do a podcast from Dave and Buster's. Well, the audio was so bad that got killed. We never even put it out. And again, he set that up. So then we go to Kankakee, Illinois, his hometown. Everybody's mad so much that they do a front page article on it in the paper. He can't figure out why the paper disparaged him and insulted him so badly. So I get the backstory later from the actual writer who contacts me on my private email and lets me know why he disparaged him because of all the things that Joel had done in that town leading up to the event. And once again, it was a podcast of which I can't prove ever happened because no audios and no camera worked, again, lined up by him. And then I was the bad guy. Then he wanted X amount of money, which I gave him in addition to a car, in addition to all the perks and everything else. And I still ended up the bad guy. And I was a liar, a thief, and a scumbag. Oh, and a coward. He slipped coward in there. So I wrote him back and I said, scumbag, yeah, sure. Coward, that's going to be a tough sell. Liar, ? You got to explain that. You got to explain where there was a lie told to you. And it's like, hey, I'm not putting you down. But all of these things I just said happened. We did three shows. None of them went well. We could never return to those towns because of things that you did. All of those things happened. So where was it that you were slighted? And that was the part that was frustrating for me. I was never mad. I never even knew what we were fighting about the day in the car that all hell broke loose. It was just never really clear. But now it's like, Joel, I don't know how to let you come back. I mean, I don't really know how to go down that path again. And then he said, well, I want to come on and, you know, why don't you give me 60 days and I'll just go do my own podcast, but give me 60 days on your show to build it up so I can go into it with a little bit of run. And it's like, hey, if you want to go into podcasting, I support you completely. Go ahead and do it. But I'm a little confused. You know, he's not a podcaster. I guess he's not a podcaster, but he had a buddy that had a podcast, so then he had a presence. But he's not a podcast. He came on this show, Brian, he was telling me he's better than Ariel Helwani. He's the best journalist in MMA. I'm like, you're better than Ariel Helwani. No one's better than Ariel Helwani. Ariel Helwani is literally the number one journalist in MMA. Jamie, would you dispute? Is there any way to even dispute that? It wouldn't matter if you liked Ariel or didn't like him. His numbers are his numbers. He's the best.
He's the guy.
He's the guy. How do you get around that? And so I kind of go, hey, man, we're crashing in the same car. We just keep crashing in the same car. And I'll tell you this, as much as I just told you about him, Brian, I miss him. I miss having him down. He's a lot of fun. A lot of fun to hang out with. And a lot of it was because of the erraticness, but I got a kick out of it. I'm not a guy that's looking for stability. I like a little bit of wildness. So I miss having him down here, but I just don't know how to proceed when a guy is telling you, look, I want to go do my own thing anyway. That's the reason I'm using your show. And by the way, I need X, Y, and Z because I built your show. And it's like, hey, I'm a little confused here. You know, I'm not getting anything out of this, but I would appreciate a thank you every now and then. And if I'm a scumbag for wanting that, then I'm guilty because I want a little appreciation.
Well, Chill, I think it's got to go back to the original arrangement, which was he got to come down to the studio, he got to hang out, but he wouldn't come on air. You know, he'd drive you, he'd get you a cup of coffee, get you a sandwich, something like that, where he's at least providing some productivity. Maybe some, if he's agreeable to that, I think that's a good role for him. And as far as a full-time on-air guy, I mean, I think you said it right. He's not a podcast guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was just the bottom line. That wasn't meant to be a knock. I mean, Brian, you like me. You trust me. If you needed open heart surgery, I'm not going to be the one that performs it on you. That's just not what I do. You know, so there was never an insult in there. It was just a tough spot. It's like, hey, he also has a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I've told him this. I'm not speaking out of turn here. And if Joel ever wants to come on and tell his side, he will certainly give him that opportunity. But he does have a self-fulfilling prophecy that's very negative. I've heard him give this spiel to people time and time again, where he'll say, "I have a PhD in failure, and failure's a process, and I'm going through it." And it's like, yeah, let's get one right every now and then. We don't always have to go into something knowing we're going to fail. Let's get one right every now and then. And he's also got an expression that he can't work anywhere more than 90 days. That's his limit. He'll get a job at a different car lot, a great job. I mean, you know, some of those car gigs, and he has a very good mind for it, particularly in the finance department. He'll make between $14,000 and $17,000 a month. However, one of the reasons car guys make so much money is it's just a tough gig. You got to be there on the weekends. You're working late. You're working until 9 and 10 at night. It's a lot of hours, and he doesn't want to do that. He wants from 9 to 5. He's not working what they call a bell in the car business, and he's not working weekends. It's like, well, then you're not working in the car business. It's like, do you want to make a living or not? Because there's some sacrifices you have to make. There's some tough stuff you have to do. And if the only thing you have to put on your resume is that I'm a car guy, well, then you got to go be a car guy. I think that's reasonable. But, I mean, that would infuriate him. He would rather, you know, get money from his family or from wherever he could. And he's fine with that. And they're all at work to have that money. And he's sitting at home and mad if they don't send it to him. It's just a different mentality. It's like, hey, Joel, let's start over from scratch here. Let's start over from scratch. Let's go into something. Let's do it the right way. Let's be nice to the people that we work with. Let's go into a town. Let's just do it professionally and nice and clean and straight. And let's start from scratch. That's kind of been a tough concept to relate to him.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's really going to miss it because, you know, it seems like he wants this, he wants the public to know him. You know, he wants this persona. He wants people to, you know, use his lines. He wants to be recognized in public. So I think this is going to be a tough thing for him to adjust to. But, you know, hey, you know, he knows how to get a hold of you. And if he's in his right mind, he'll know that this whole charade has been you just kind of having a goof. It was never a, hey, come on the show because I want to make the show, I want to take this to the next level. I mean, you had been doing the show for well over a year by yourself, doing great numbers. The reason why you do multiple shows a week is because you used to do it once a week solo, and it got so popular that the distributor was like, we want more.
That's true.
You know, it wasn't like Joel took you to another level, you know. But he's got to decide if he wants to come back to the table, and then you got to decide if it's worth the, you know, if the laughs are worth the headaches.
So, Brian, Jamie and I down here, I'll switch gears on you. I was just filling you in for the listeners. You and I are very good friends, and we haven't spoken in a couple of weeks. So we're down here catching up. If we were in a private conversation, those are the things I would have shared with you. So there you are. Jamie and I are down here. We're pretty excited because tomorrow, Saturday, big boxing match. We love boxing. We don't get a lot of big boxing matches. Klitschko just got upset, and so, you know, the world of boxing gets a little bit more interesting anytime there's parity and there's new blood coming in. But there is a big fight tomorrow between Canelo and Chavez Jr. I know you're a big boxing guy, too. When I look at that fight, I see Canelo all day long. But Jamie's told me, hey, you need to look at it again because Chavez has a reach. He's a big guy. He's a tough guy, and he's got a lot on the line here. What do you think of that fight?
I think it's going to be exciting for a while. I think both of those guys are not going to be afraid to, you know, mix it up. But, you know, Canelo, only one guy's gotten the best of Canelo. And I think Chavez is, you know, he hasn't been very disciplined. He is tough. I think the big test that he had was against Sergio Martinez a couple years back. And, other than the 12th round, if I'm remembering that fight correctly, I think Martinez got the best of him. I think Chavez is an A plus name on a billboard. But I think he's like a B plus fighter, with Canelo being an A level fighter.
Yeah, Brian. Hey, this is Jamie. I agree with everything you said. I'm kind of hoping for something better because obviously the Chavez name means everything in Mexico, and in Mexico, Canelo kind of is the guy at that weight class right now. I'm hoping that Chavez somehow shows up, has something to prove. You know, he's if he really wants the Mexican boxing fans behind him, he's really got to show up and do something. I definitely agree. I put my money on Canelo all day long. But this is the biggest guy that Chavez has fought. This is the biggest guy that Canelo has fought to date. And obviously they want to get this fight done so that they can hopefully move on to the one everybody really wants to see, is the Triple G. We'll see what Chavez does. Maybe he can get in there and make some waves and upset. You know, he'd definitely be throwing a monkey wrench in the whole future of it if he can somehow find a way to win.
Yeah, man, you know, I hope it goes according to plan, kind of selfishly. You know, I live in Austin, Texas now, and Arlington, Texas is about 3.5-hour drive, so it's real easy for me. You know, if they do it at Jerry Jones' stadium in Arlington, Triple G versus Canelo, you know, in front of 90,000 fans to try to emulate what happened this past weekend in the UK with Joshua and Klitschko. You know, I think that'd be, you know, one of those huge fights that people look back at, you know, the way we look back on some of the Sugar Ray fights and these mega fights of generations ago.
Yeah. Well, Chavez has some tools, so it'll be interesting to see. Hey, I drank the last three Coors Lights out of the refrigerator, brother. So next time I see you, I owe you a few.
You know, I've never been in the studio.
At Chael's house.
Yeah, at the house.
Yeah,
Jamie,
at the house.
Jamie said, "Hey, I want a beer," and I said, "Well, we don't have any beer." And I said, "Well, hold on." I said, "Wait a second. Let me check in the back because I remember there was some beers left over from the last time Brian was here." So I moved the cans of pop out of the way, and sure enough, there was three back there. They're gone now.
They're gone now, baby.
There was three.
I didn't know you were doing it from the house. I mean, that's cool that you can record from the house. But yeah, that was Pharaoh actually was fetching them for me.
Oh man, you had them trained.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, give me a silver bullet. There, yeah. I knew where to go. Hey, Brian, let me switch gears on you here, man. Next week we got Submission Underground. A couple of big matches. I mean, there's a few real fun ones, but there's a couple of big ones. First off, Uriah Faber stepping way out of his comfort zone and taking on two-time world champion in Meow. Popular opinion says Meow's going to win, but popular opinion's been wrong. You know, don't forget what Chad Mendes just did. He was supposed to lose as well. Under EBI rules, there is some strategy involved. And when you have a competitor like Faber, it does surprise me when anybody can count that guy out ever. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, and that's one of the reasons, you know, just to draw the curtain back a little, that's one of the reasons we use Eddie's rule set. It's because anything can happen, and sometimes you do get these screwball finishes, like with Chad Mendes against Jeff Glover at Sug 3. So the strategy for Uriah is to get this thing in overtime, because all of those Team Alpha Male guys have guillotines and other submission grips from hell. You know, I don't know how those guys came to, you know, why they're so much better than other gyms, but they all have these really tight submissions that they can catch you no matter how slick you are or how skilled you are. So, you know, I've even seen some chatter on Facebook and Twitter that, you know, Uriah will be afraid to engage and Meow is just going to butt scoot. And I'm like, come on, guys. You know, you're talking ridiculousness here. First of all, it's going to be in a cage. You can only scoot for so long. Secondly, name me a fight Uriah Faber ever didn't engage. I mean, that was the knock against Faber, that he went out there and engaged too much and then those were the fights he lost, like against Mike Brown.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. And I've heard that same stuff. And anybody that thinks Faber's going to back down is just totally wrong. Now, Meow is the 2-time world champion. A guy, Faber should not be able to come into his world and do well. But back to your point about the way the EBI rules are set up and with the overtime format, there is some definite strategy. And we've seen guys invoke it. We've seen Gary Tonin invoke it better than anybody, understanding that rule set. Uriah's never done it. Does he understand the rule set? I trust he's done his homework. I don't know. I really don't know. But I think that's an interesting match. Anytime you bring over, the best from MMA and put him against the best in grappa, I just think that's a really fun way to do it. Let's move on to the main event. Lot on the line.
I wanted to say one other thing that I'm seeing, Chill, is like, I think people are so quick to say that the guy from the world of jiu-jitsu has the advantage. Why does he have the advantage? Because that's what he does. Well, I don't know. I mean, just because, like, that's not what you do for a living specifically, that doesn't mean that you can't grapple at the same level as those guys. And so, we saw that with Chad Mendes. We saw that with Shoeface. Even though Shoeface has beaten the best of the best in jiu-jitsu, that was 4 years ago. He's not training at American Top Team working on jiu-jitsu like he would when he was going to the World Championships. Definitely not training the same way Tonin is to try to win the Abu Dhabi in Helsinki this year.
Yeah.
So I think the fans got to realize, got to give the MMA guys and their jiu-jitsu training a little bit more credit, and these are not mismatches.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I fully agree there. And the one thing that the jiu-jitsu guys have learned and had a hard time with is the pace. Uriah Faber is going to explode. If he feels he's in trouble, he's going to explode powerfully and quickly to get out of it. And in jiu-jitsu, it's a little bit slower pace. You've got the gi, you grab the guy. You don't see those big explosions. You see more technique, and they even call it chess, and I think that they're accurately explaining what it is they're trying to do. But Uriah, particularly with no gi in an MMA situation that he's used to, there's going to be very powerful things. We saw Chad do that. Chad Mendes was absolutely outplayed at every turn by Jeff Glover. Absolutely. Glover was 5 times more comfortable. But when Chad was in trouble, he knew how to explode. And with no gi on, and as the match is going on, he's getting slippery. Glover lost position after position, even though it was very clear who the more skilled, pure submission grappler was. That's not always what it's about. You've got to lock it on and make the other guy say uncle. And that's tough to do with guys like Uriah and like Chad that have that explosion button, and they could just power and speed and slip out of things that other guys aren't going to do to you in those kind of competitions. That's been one of the things that I learned. I didn't know that going in, but that is one of the things that I learned, particularly from watching Chad. And Glover was, man, that explosion's a real deal when a guy is a little bit slippery. It'll get him out of some tight spots.
And how about the cage, too? Because with the cage, there are no resets. There's no timeouts in this thing. Like, you go up against the cage, you got to work it out with your opponent to get off that cage.
Yeah,
and I got to put the strength advantage. I got to feel that Faber can put me out anywhere he wants, whenever he wants. And, there's going to be absolutely no breaks in the action. I think that's another variable that maybe people aren't taking into consideration.
All right, we got Coach Jamie Huey in studio. Front row Brian on the line. We're talking Submission Underground. That's going to go down on Sunday, May 14th at flowgrappling.com. Now, Brian, let's get into the main event, because we got Danis versus Shields, and that was a bit of a surprise for some people that those both guys agreed, because there's so much on the line. Jake Shields, who's been called, even by George St. Pierre, has said he is the greatest jiu-jitsu player in mixed martial arts, taking on a young and hungry Dylan Danis, who just had a defeat. What was it, the Worlds or the Pan Americans? He had a defeat. He's pissed off, and he wants a big name, and he's got one.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? Like, when we came up with that idea to do that match, we were kind of playing off a little bit of Team McGregor versus the Scrap Pack. And, I was thinking, it's a great idea. I don't know if Dylan would want to do it. I don't know if Jake's going to want to do it. And I think it was one text message from you to each of them, and they were in. They were like, we'd love to do it. You know, and this is a rule set that Dylan doesn't particularly like. I don't know Jake's feeling on it. I don't think Jake gives a shit. He's an old school guy. He'll get in there against the best of the best, any weight class, any time. But I'm looking forward to it, man. These guys are going back and forth. There's definitely a lot of mutual respect. But it's pretty clear they don't like each other.
Yeah, you know, and that was the deal from the jump, putting that match together. So many people, we got so much credit for it. Oh, wow, you guys are so good at putting matches together. But the real truth was, I committed Shields before I even talked to him. I told the boys in Austin that's done, because to your point, it's, yes, Jake Shields not going to back down, period. He has an old school mentality, anyone, anytime, and I knew that. And then Danis, though, a lot of people thought that he was a little bit more talk than action. Well, Danis is just as easy to work with. Danis wanted a big name. He wanted more. He wanted no time limit. He wanted to be able to go just until somebody submitted. It's like, well, no, we can't do that. But I think that he deserves that credit, that Danis is just as professional and easy to work with. I mean, those guys, neither one of those guys was scared, and both guys are expecting to win. And I just think that they deserve that to be said about him, because a lot of these grappling guys, Brian, man, they'd rather live off of whatever allure they can build in their hometown to keep their gyms going, but they do not want to put it on the line.
Yeah, I know. That was one thing that, you know, I guess, you know, we kind of stepped over our own event the last time we were talking about it. But, you know, man, sometimes you got to step out of the promoter talk and just talk about what's real. And that's one of the things in grappling, submission grappling, that's probably going to, you know, can be a problem sometimes, is guys don't want to put it on the line. You know, they're afraid, I don't want to take on this guy because I haven't trained no gi in a while. And my reaction to that is, who cares?
You know, right.
Do you want the match? They're like, I want the match, but I'd like somebody else. And then it's like, well, why do we want you then? Like, if you're like, I might take this guy or that guy. Like, no, those are not the guys you want to be in business with. Because what if that guy pulls out of the fight? Then you got to find another guy to placate him.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. No, I mean, it's definitely NCAA mentality over here at Flow, Olympic Games mentality over here at Flow. Nobody has to do this, but we want to find out who wants to do it. And just like the NCAA or the Olympic Games every 4 years, the right guy steps forward every time. There's never a guy that could win the Olympic gold medal that just decides to sit that cycle out. Ever. Never, ever, ever, ever happens. The right guy comes forward. And the one thing that the grapplers haven't caught on to yet, the MMA guys have, the best guy is whoever people believe is the best guy. It's not about who could catch or submit the other guy. It's not about your resume or you got a black belt over here or you did this at the Pan Ams. The best guy, when the story is written, is whoever is perceived to be the best guy. And we are the biggest promotion right now. And EBI is doing great. And, you know, they're over there on Fight Pass and doing a great job. But we work with them. So it's us. Us under the EBI. We are number one in grappling. And we're going to put forward the guys that want to do it. We're going to put the media and the money and the marketing behind them. And when the story is written, whoever's name is bigger will go down as the better grappler. And the grapplers haven't caught on to that yet. The MMA guys have. And, you know, that is the significant difference. It's like, guys, we will give you an opportunity. We will build this. We will put the money and fund it and take all of the risk. But it's for you. It's for you to come in and battle it out and somebody get crowned champion of the division. And it has been stunning to me how many guys don't want to do that. Brian, we've had guys pull out because they're getting ready for Abu Dhabi. And it's like, guys, have at it. Abu Dhabi's awesome. I'm competing in Abu Dhabi. Can't wait. But it's once every 2 years. You're a grappler that wants to grapple, but you're holding out for an opportunity that's 2 years away that you may or may not be invited to? Come on. You either want to do this or you don't. Yeah. You decide. I'll let you guys decide.
And, you know, Jill, you mentioned something. I don't think some of these guys understand the risk that a company like Flow Sports is taking by putting on these events. You know, I don't need to get into the numbers. I think everybody can kind of figure out that, these are big risks that Mark and Martin Floriani are greenlighting. And, you know, you come, you compete on a Submission Underground event. We talk a lot internally about brand equity, media equity. And that's something that, you know, we compensate our athletes and we give them the platform, we give them the stage, and then we put all these resources behind them to hype them up into these larger-than-life characters. And I think a lot of the guys realize that. I know Dylan realizes that. You know, some of these other guys, they're not getting the business side of it. They're just looking at, oh, he's got the advantage in the no-gi. I'm not really good at it. So I don't want three people on a message board to laugh at me.
Sure.
You know, I don't get it.
Yeah, no, that is a different mindset. That is definitely a different mindset with, like, you know, say what Flow Wrestling is doing as opposed to Flow Grappling. The wrestlers that will look at it and say, hey, I'm not very good in these positions, will jump in those tournaments to work on those positions so that they can be better at it and they can be stronger. They will look for harder competition. They will look for brackets where they go, hey, I think I could lose here. In fact, I think I could lose to a few of these guys. I'm in. It's a different mindset about what it takes to get better. And, you know, just remembering, it's not where you start, it's where you finish. And getting those experiences are really important. And yes, the grapplers, it is different where they'll look at somebody or a skill set and say, well, I don't want to do that match. And that's tough. I'm not going to call you again. It's one shot. And if you say no, then the answer is no. But the answer will always be no. One no is no forever. And you got to move on to the guys that want to do it. So I do get your point there. Are you comfortable giving me a prediction? And I'm not comfortable giving you one, so if you don't want to give one, I get. But are you comfortable in the main event? Jake Shields, who George St. Pierre himself said is the best jiu-jitsu player in all of MMA, versus Dylan Danis, the big name out there right now, Conor McGregor's camp, Marcelo Garcia black belt, just signed with Bellator. I mean, a big match. Who do you think wins?
It's going to go to overtime. I mean, you're not going to submit Jake Shields. As slick as Dylan is, you know, Jake's been training his jiu-jitsu really hard. I don't think he has another MMA fight until June. He's got another fight in World Series. I know he's been in New York City training really hard with George St. Pierre, John Danaher, probably Tonin and Ryan, too. So he's going to be ready. I can't see Dylan tapping him in regulation. And then, you know, we're going to go into that overtime when anything can and will happen. But, you know, if you gotta put a gun to my head, I'll go with the younger blood, Dylan Danis. But, I mean, to me, this is basically a pick 'em.
Yeah, I agree with that. I will say this without making a prediction, but I will say this. Jake Shields brings a pressure that other guys don't bring. And Tyron Woodley felt it. Damian Maya felt it. George St. Pierre felt it. I mean, it is a pressure. And that is the intangible. Is Dylan ready for that pressure? He says he is. He wanted no time limit. He was not worried about cardio. But that's the question. Thinking that you're ready for that Shields pressure and being ready for it are two different things. And, Dylan is younger and a little slicker and a little bit longer. That's all true. He lacks in experience what Jake has, but I think the question does come down to that pressure, holding up when your lungs are burning, man. That's the question in combat sports for everybody, for the boxers, the wrestlers, the grapplers, you name it.
Is that an 8-minute bout or is that under a special rule set?
Well, because it's main event, it's 10 minutes. So, I mean, it's very close. It's only two extra minutes, but because it's main event, that's what his SUG has gone to for all main events will be 10 minutes. So it's 10 minutes to answer your question.
Cool. Yeah, because I know Kevin Sander, our events director at Flow, who works with you putting on the event, was... you know, he was getting the same messages. You know, both guys are like, let's forget. Who needs a time limit? Let's just whoever taps the other guy out first. Or, you know, but we're like, guys, we need some consistency with our rules set from show to show, you know?
Yeah, well, and the window isn't meant to go forever either. You know, if there's a potential for a Broadway where these guys are going to go an hour, you know, like what Gordon Ryan likes to go through, that's an event in and of itself. We can't, you know, there, it's still a show. At some point, you have to fade to black and roll the credits. There's got to be a structure in place, to your point, particularly if you're trying to build divisions and eventually crown somebody champion. There has to be a built-in structure. You know, so we had to go to Eddie and ask him about this because it's under the EBI rules. And he's like, look, if you want to make a main event 2 minutes longer, have at it. But no, right now, it's not just open. So, I mean, that was the answer. Sure. That's it. You got to have some structure, and that was the answer we got back, so that's what it's going to be. But to your point, I love that you bring that up because, yeah, these guys are not scared to go out there and put it on the line. And there's a lot on the line. There's a lot on the line for Jake because, you know, Dylan is that younger guy that just got a very lucrative and big contract with Bellator. There's a lot on the line. Can he still do it? And he's saying, yeah, put me in.
Yeah, and there's also a lot, you know, Dylan, like you said, he got that lucrative contract. Is he looking forward to MMA too much? You know, he recently got kicked out of his gym by Marcelo Garcia, maybe the best grappler to ever do this. Just didn't like his attitude, kicked him out of the gym. I know that kind of shook Dylan. We were supposed to do a photo, video shoot. That day, and you know, like a professional, he did it, but it wasn't under the best of circumstances, because you know, when the greatest ever kicks you out of his gym, it's kind of a, you know, it'll throw you for a little bit of a loop mentally.
Yeah, plus that's his mentor.
I don't know.
You know, plus that's his mentor, so it hurt his feel. It rattled him. It rattled him. He's back on board now, but yeah, that was a tough day for him.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, you said live on Flow Grappling. Those guys are up to so much incredible stuff. At least 8 to 10 live events every month. Did the Abu Dhabi West Coast Trials a few weeks back with just an all-star cast. And I think a press release just went out about 4 or 5 days ago about Flow being the exclusive home of the Abu Dhabi World Championships that you'll compete at in a super fight in September in Helsinki, Finland. So all the big events, Submission Underground, Fight to Win, Abu Dhabi, IBJJF, only on Flow Grappling. And for the people in Portland, Oregon, or if you want to drive, there are some tickets left at the Roseland Theater. They're priced pretty inexpensive. I think they range from $20 to $50, and when we say cage side, like the cage is in your face. Like you know the venue more than me, Chill.
Yeah, if you put your hand out, you will be touching the fence. That is how close the fans get to the action.
This is Jay Moore. I have a new sports podcast every day. More sports. Hashtag more sports. You don't even have to know anything about sports to love it. All you got to know is I get down. I tell it like it is. I curse. I know. That's weird. And I guarantee you will love it. Podcast One. Podcast One app. Please hit subscribe.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Hey, Brian, let me switch gears on you. I got to ask you about something, man. Kayfabe in wrestling is gone, and even the wrestlers don't even respect it. I'll give you an example. Right now, Braun and Roman are in an absolute heated feud. It's brutal. They're flipping over ambulances, and they, you know, throwing Roman off of a 20-foot drop. It's crazy. It's crazy, the feud between Roman and Braun. It's really hot. Then Titus O'Neil goes and he tweets out a pic of Braun and Roman behind the scenes in Nepal hanging out like they're best friends. I don't like that. I love that the fourth curtain has been revealed. I love that we're in on the gag. But when I'm watching wrestling, I want to choose to suspend reality and believe that these guys are actually contesting something against one another. I want to set aside the fact that it's been revealed to us that it's staged. I do not like that Titus O'Neil is tweeting out pics of guys in the hottest feud in the business right now hanging out poolside with each other in Nepal. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right, and I don't think that makes us old school. I think that makes us wrestling fans. I think that, number one, it's stupid. Number two, it's probably disrespectful to the art form that is professional wrestling, because it's kind of a sport, but it is more performance art that requires you to suspend your disbelief, but that doesn't mean that you should tell the fans or the marks, be like, look how fucking stupid you guys are. You know, these guys are hanging out at the pool, and now you're supposed to believe that they don't like each other, and that's why they're fighting in this performance type art. I don't like it, man, and I don't like when these storylines get so ridiculous. I remember, you know, 15, 17 years ago, they put Stone Cold in a car, and Triple H had lifted the car up, and it went down like 50 feet or something, or Mr. McMahon's car blowing up. I hate when it gets that stupid, because that's when I'm just like, you know what? Maybe this is not for me no more. This is more than there's just, it's so far from reality.
Yeah,
you know, let's try to keep it close to reality and stop, get off the social media shit.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, when they go to some of those scenes like what you just mentioned, the car going off the cliff or Mr. McMahon's limo blowing up, it's like, wait, are we supposed to believe, one, that he died, or two, if he didn't die, that the other wrestler just did an attempted murder, and then I'm supposed to just tune in the next week and pay money to watch this guy that just did either a murder or an attempted murder? It's like, hey, it's too far, man. You went too far for me now.
There was a stand-up comedian that had a bit about The Undertaker walking into a grocery store and asking the lady where the produce section is in character. It was classic.
And he did that?
The comedian, that was his skit, was The Undertaker. He's like, do you think this guy just walks around like this all the time?
Yes.
Like, this isn't real, guys.
So I'll answer that. Yes. The Undertaker, and I don't know if he still does, but I had a run-in with him. I was 9 years old in an airport, and I was, oh my goodness, I was so starstruck. There was The Undertaker. He was in character in the airport. That was back in the kayfabe
days. Hat, the hair, everything.
Oh, the whole bit. He would not talk to you, he would not do pictures. He did not want to hear you were
so
a fan.
He will walk into a grocery store and say, where's the lettuce?
Well, I don't know if he did that one or not, but I can tell you, I saw him in St. Paul, Minnesota in the airport. I was a little kid. You know those guys cater to little kids?
Yeah, of course.
And no, he no-sold it. You know, I met him again as adults and brought little kids up to him, and he couldn't have been a greater guy.
Wow. Wouldn't
it be possible for him to be a greater guy? I did it in Austin, Texas. I took this kid up who asked me, and Taker just gave him all the time in the world. Couldn't have been a better guy, but...
But he walked around like that in character.
Yeah, but that era doesn't exist anymore of the kayfabe, you know, that it doesn't exist where they have to be in character at all times. You know, Ted DiBiase wasn't allowed to go anywhere without a limousine and without Virgil with him. That includes
really?
In his hometown. Yeah, they stuck to the gimmick. Now, they eventually let people in on the gag, and then that got dropped a little bit. But to this point, you got two wrestlers that are feuding with each other. Now, they're hanging out at the hotel in Nepal. Their hands are clean on that. I mean, they don't have to walk around mad. But then you have a third wrestler that takes a picture and tweets it out. He's the one that did wrong.
Yeah.
And it's like, Titus, you're too young or you're too dumb. It's one of the two to understand there's an art to this business. And as fans, we don't need to see everything. We don't even want to know how the sausage is made. Just give it to us.
Just pretend it's real.
Mm. You know, Joe, that, it's just like stand-up comedy. Do you think George Carlin or Bill Burr, Richard Pryor, Joe Rogan, would ever tell a joke and then turn to the audience, hey, I'm just joking. You know that, right?
Right, yes.
You don't do that.
Never. You would never do it. You bring them in on it. You blur the lines, man. It's entertainment. Yeah, I fully agree with you. Hey, Jamie was asking me, we're having dinner two nights ago. He was asking me about your run-in with Chappelle. Now, I know you've already come on this show and you told it, but I told him as best I could. I said, look, it actually wasn't heated. Brian was at a Chappelle show. He got a back and forth. Chappelle sat on the edge of the stage and just talked to Brian back and forth for about 20 minutes. I said it actually wasn't as heated as some of the reports that first came out. I'm telling that right, correct? I mean, I'm telling that the way it happened. Okay.
Yeah, there were some people saying, like, I was heckling him, and Dave has a very strict policy. Like, if you heckle him, if you even yell out, hey, Dave, you will get kicked out. And I did not get kicked out. He spoke in my direction or to me for 20 minutes. He was only on stage for 60 minutes. And it started out, I had went to the restroom at about the 40-minute mark of his performance, and I was trying to sneak back in. I didn't want to be disrespectful. And I was just trying to sneak back in. I was, you know, just trying to be under the radar because I was like, you know, I don't know this guy's act that well. You know, I don't want to be the butt of
a joke. You don't want to be a part of it.
Yeah, I just want to watch. And I was literally, you know, 3 or 4 feet away from Dave. And he goes, how's it going, young man? Welcome back. and he says to me, you get yourself a beer? And actually, I hadn't. I said, no, could you get me one? And he says, motherfucker, can I get you a beer? I wasn't being a smartass. I really thought, like, hey, you know, he probably has beer in the back. He could, you know, maybe bring one out to me, and that would be like a fun story to tell people that Dave Chappelle brought you a beer during a show.
Yeah.
I thought, hey, that's where it begins and that's where it ends. And then it went into Trump, and he's like, who did you vote for, young man? And I said, I voted for Donald Trump.
Oh,
I'm
boy.
Very proud of him.
Okay.
And we keep going back and forth. And, you know, he's at the edge of the stage. He's sitting on the stool. He's smoking a cigarette. And he just looks down on me and he says, what else you got? You know, like, I would say something and he went into the story about Emmett Till, I guess it was a person in the 1950s that was lynched in Mississippi. You know, it was a touching story. It was, in my opinion, not really germane to what we were talking about. I mean, trying to associate Trump with anything like a lynching to me is just absurd and not really in the spirit of comedy. But it was fun, man. And no one would believe me except I have two guys that I work with happen to be there. And so they backed me up, and there were some people on social media that were saying that it happened because Dave has this, I think it's called it's some kind of glove that you put your phone in, some kind of like thermal glove, and it's impossible to open it unless you go to security, and they have this deactivation things. I don't know if it's a magnet or something, but it's impossible to get your phone out and to record it. So there's no record of it other than, you know, my recollection. But I don't know, maybe Dave did record it. Maybe he had a camera on in the back or, you know, the soundboard. I don't know, but I haven't seen it on YouTube or anything like that.
I saw him at Corvallis, Oregon at the college once. And it's exactly what you said. I'm sure he had an act in his back pocket that he could go to if he needed to, but I'm convinced he stood up there and just went off, just off the top of his head for at least an hour and a half.
Freestyle. He freestyled it.
Yeah, everything was based off somebody in the crowd or a funny story on the way to the event. But it didn't feel like there was a single joke that was scripted the whole time he was up there.
You know, he went into a story actually about Portland. He mentioned Portland and he said something like, anybody from Portland? And like one person screamed and he said something like, oh, you moved from one crazy fucking city to another. And then he goes into a story about how he doesn't give a shit if he offends people. But one time he did care that he offended somebody and he was in Portland, Oregon. And he made a joke about a transgender person. I don't know the subject matter of the joke. He didn't get into that part. But he said that somebody found out where he was staying in downtown Portland and wrote him a letter. His other punchline was like, hey, you know all these letters that you guys send me that you think I read? I don't read them. I read none of them. But he said this person left it at the table in his hotel room in downtown Portland. And it was a letter addressed to him saying this, that from a transgendered person, that he had offended that person with his humor. And he said that's the only time he ever felt bad about telling a joke.
So Chappelle has a heart. Who would have thought?
Yeah, that was his Portland tie-in. But, you know, it was a good time. I mean, if Chappelle's coming to your city, man, you should see him. Another guy I saw in San Antonio recently I thought was great was Bill Burr.
Is Bill Burr pretty funny? I mean, he is so famous. I've never caught his act, Brian. I hear about him all the time. I hear he's great. I've never caught it.
He's a very funny guy, and the Boston, like, you know, he's got that. He's still got that Boston accent, and it just works for him, you know. And he's really irreverent. Like, you know, he on his last Netflix thing, he had something like, you know, talking about Hitler. You can't joke about Hitler, right?
Not possible. It is not possible.
Basically,
he's part of Joe Rogan's crew, isn't he? The I forget what they call themselves. Okay.
Yeah, he's in with Rogan, but basically he was saying, like, how come Stalin doesn't get any credit? He killed 21 million people. Hitler only killed 6 million people.
Oh, jeez.
Stalin gets no credit. It was like, I was like, you can't possibly joke about Hitler. Well, Bill Burr found a way to do it that was funny, and he didn't offend anybody.
Wow.
So it was like,
that's a skill.
That's the art form.
Yeah, hey, Tao was a terrible, awful killer himself that also surpassed the 6 million number. And that gets forgot about, too. So I guess I'll tip my knowledge there towards Bill Burr on that one.
There's a Matt somewhere.
Yeah, there's a bit.
You're going to have to work on that.
Hey, Brian, tell me this. So Bill Burr, I'm going to go check him out. But tell me this straight up, who is better, Bill Burr or U.S. royalty Joey Diaz?
Oh, come on.
Oh, I'm such a homer for Uncle Joey, man.
Absolutely.
Uncle Joey, I think part of it is, you know, I grew up probably about 25 miles north of where he's from, North Bergen, New Jersey. But I grew up 25 miles north. It might as well be like night and day. It's so different. It was like kind of an upper middle class. I wouldn't say it was as wealthy as Westland, Oregon, but maybe like Wilsonville or something like that. But he reminds me of so many of the guys that I went to high school with. He could be their dad, you know, back when I was in high school in the early 2000s, late 90s. And what is so amazing about Joey Diaz is there is nothing this guy has not done. He's had every job there's ever been. He's met every type of person. He's done coke in every type of situation. I mean, there is nothing.
Just happened to have a machine gun on him.
There's nothing you can say to Uncle Joey where he'll be like, "Yeah, dog, are you serious?"
He's the exact same person when you meet him too. The first time I was a big fan of him. First time I saw him, it was behind a UFC at a weigh-in, and I walked up and I go, "Joey," and he goes, "Hey, man," and he's just as happy to see me as I was him. He doesn't know who I am, and we talked for a little while, and I told him I was there cornering Mike Pierce, and he was a huge fan of Mike because Mike had fought John Fitch in his second fight, and Mike had put up such a great fight with Fitch, who was the number two guy at the time, and Mike was his second fight into the UFC, and so he was such a fan of Pierce. He was excited to meet Mike, and then we ran into him several other times, and he was just, I mean, what you see is what you get with Joey. There's absolutely, whatever position you're going to meet him in, he's going to be the same guy if you run him into a bathroom or if you meet him at the White House. He's probably one of my favorite all-time comedians, just because he's so real. I mean, he literally doesn't get up there and do an act. He gets up there, he tells you about his life, and then so we went and saw him here in Portland, and so afterwards we go have a couple beers with Joe Rogan and Joey Diaz when it kind of shut down, and we're back there chilling and talking and whatnot. And I go, "So what's next, Joey? Where are you going?" He goes, "Oh, I'm going, you know, dog, I'm going back to fucking New York, you know," and goes into his thing, and Joe Rogan was going up to Seattle, and Joey goes and told the same story he just told on stage. "Yeah, you know, dog, I can't go up to Seattle because I got a fucking warrant up there." And it was, and I thought the act part was him talking about this warrant that he had up in Seattle for like 12 years, but it was a real thing. He had a warrant and he couldn't go to Seattle, so he was going back wherever he was going. And that's his act, is just talking about his life. He's got that many stories.
Brian, what was it? You were imitating him. You do such a good Joey Diaz impersonation, but you were telling me a story that he was on Joe Rogan bragging about Stiopich.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
he couldn't get the name right.
They were talking about Brock Lesnar and Schaub and Rogan were talking about Brock Lesnar, and Joey wasn't having any of it. And he says, "I think that guy Stiopic would fucking kill fucking Brock Lesnar." And they're like, he says, "He's got that fucking immigrant mentality, dog. He don't give a fuck." And then Joe says, he was born in Cleveland. He's like, "I don't give a fuck, dog. He's got that fucking crazy blood in him."
But he still had the name wrong. He was calling like Stiopic or something, right? He couldn't say Stipe Miocic. He just couldn't do it.
Yeah, they finally told him. He's like, "Who gives a fuck?"
Hey, I just bought Joey Diaz breakfast in New York. We were out there for the press conference. Do you guys want to ask me how that breakfast was?
Absolutely. How did that breakfast go?
Never saw him.
He didn't show up?
Reached out to me, set the whole thing up. I showed up. He was a little bit late, so I ordered him the same thing that I had. A couple of ham and cheese omelets, hash browns, sourdough toast. He never showed up. I ate my omelet, hash browns, both of our toast. Paid the bill and walked out.
Did he text you? Did he hear back from him?
Never heard from him.
Joey, come on now.
Never heard. And it was his idea. Yeah. He's like, "Hey, I'm in New York. You're in New York. Let's get breakfast." Set the whole thing up. Got up a little earlier than I wanted to, the whole bit. Bought him breakfast.
Wow.
Never saw him.
Joey.
You know what, Jill Sonnen? I robbed a hookah in Seattle in 1988. I took her hairpiece off, threw it in a dumpster, fucking lit it on fire. Did he tell you that some story like that?
Yeah.
Like, "You know what, Jill Sonnen?"
Yeah, Chael Sonnen. Yeah.
I said, "Joey, you know, how did this whole thing happen? You know, kind of like, hey, how'd you become famous?" And he said, "I met a Jersey, or I got a hooker out in Jersey and set her wig on fire." I'm like, okay, first off, that's really, I'd love to hear that story, but how did you become famous? How does that tie into my question? And then he told it. He said, I went on some show, I told that story. I just started telling stories about my life, and people loved them, and they went crazy. And he said, "But that town I was from, like, I thought I would tell you I let a hooker's wig on fire, and you're going to tell me why I let 10 hooker's wigs on fire. I didn't know it was a big deal." That was the point he was trying to make in his own way. And then, yeah, he tells me that Seattle thing, too. He can't come out there he's got a warrant.
Yeah, he's got a warrant.
I said, what got you a warrant? And he tells me that he stole, knocked over some drug dealer, took two kilos of coke off him, doing the cop's job.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's how he said it. So that's what the cops do. They take these guys' drugs off the street. So I did it for him. And I just happened to have a machine gun.
Just happened?
Yeah. He just slipped it in. He goes, "When I did it, I just happened to have a machine gun." And he's like, that's not the part that got me in trouble. What got me in trouble was I duct taped the dealer and put him in my trunk for a couple of days.
Yes.
It's like, is this the same guy?
What? Now, what happened?
Is this the same? This isn't the same guy he kidnapped that later he became friends.
Same guy.
Okay, same guy.
But
okay.
He said the guy never turned him in. He goes, "He didn't turn me in. He was solid. He kept his mouth shut." But then something else got, like, before we finally got to the end of whatever had him in trouble, he committed so many felonies, so many imprisonable felonies, all in this one story. It just tells, this is the first time I ever talked to him. It was hilarious.
Is it possible Joey Diaz has some stories he won't tell?
I would like to know.
Right? Now that would be fascinating.
Yeah.
What could they be?
The whole thing, I had him on, and it was real topical right then. President Obama had just said, "Hey, go in whatever bathroom you want. Just go in whatever bathroom you want. That's how I'm going to handle this transgender thing." That had come out. So I asked him what he thinks about that. He said, "I've been going to the bathroom I've been going in the women's bathroom since I was 5 years old.
Because they're cleaner."
Yeah, he said, "I prefer to do coke in the woman's bathroom because it's cleaner."
It's cleaner.
And it was just a straight shoot. There was no bit there. It was just hilarious.
There can't be any stories he hasn't told.
All right, FRB, I'm looking at the clock, buddy. You got anything else to get off your chest?
No, that's it, man. I could talk about Joey all day. I got go into YouTube and put in the one. This is the last thing. Go into YouTube. Joey Diaz was a bartender in high school, and he tells you about how he was a bartender while he was in high school, which I didn't even know was possible. But that's another one of his great tales.
Well, this is why he was going to the bathroom in the women's room. He said, like, his mom owned
a bar
or something.
Yep.
I'm going to check it out. So what do I type in? Joey Diaz was a bartender in high school.
Yeah, and he talks about how he was collecting. He would show up at the bar around 3 a.m., rob the place because he had the key, And then the bar was owned by this guy who used to play for the Chicago Bulls way back. He was, you know, probably in the 1960s. And Joey said that, you know, I looked him up. I was going to apologize, but the motherfucker had died.
Ah, well, I'm sorry the guy died, but it's still a funny bit. There's no way around it. FRB, thank you, buddy.
All right, man.
All right, Brian. Take care, brother.
Talk to you soon. All right, here, Jamie. Let's
rush down to Kennedy Boulevard and walk all the way to fucking Secaucus and load trucks. This is when I was, you know, just 17.
I loaded trucks too. Roadway.
Roadway
on the docks, midnight to 9 a.m.
Oh my God, picking up fucking Volkswagen. Things, and but it was like 16 an hour.
Yeah, I know. I think it was like $14 an hour.
Yeah,
19 years old. So we, you know, do two or three nights, and then we get off work and just go right to the bar and drink, so we could put ourselves to sleep. So at 9:30 in the morning, we're at the bar drinking Bud cans.
What bars are open at 9:30 in the morning?
All of them.
Yeah, all of them.
When I quit high school, my mom had a bar before I, like on 29th and Bergen Line, but her drinking spot was the last bar in New Jersey, and if you took the bus to the city, you have to go through Union City, and then it picks you up by the post office, and it takes you right down into Lincoln Tunnel. You pass Hess Gas Station,
yep,
and you're right there, the basketball
Boulevard
court, East. We walk in Boulevard East. Okay. I needed a job, and I needed a job off the books. I was collecting unemployment from a fucker. Yeah, this is, you know, in the 80s, this is what you did. And in those days, like, you could pick up a job off the books that paid you $600-$700. And collect $400-$500 from unemployment and live like a fucking doctor. So most people had the year scam.
I love how Jim didn't even blink. Like, I was laughing. Jim's like, yeah, what happened next?
Absolutely. I know 10 guys that did
that.
Yeah,
this is, I know people that purposely got laid off. Like, they had a deal with the boss. Like, just lay me off, pay me $3 a week unemployment. I'll make it happen. I got a better job. It's off the books. Everybody worked off the books. Everybody collected a check. It was fucking brilliant. So I went in there one day. The guy's name was Teddy Martuniak. He had played for the Chicago Bulls. A fucking big-time drunk. If you look him up, he recently died. I looked him up because I was going to call him and apologize. Because I destroyed his world for like 6 months. But the first thing he said to me, he goes, I can hire you. But there's one problem. I got one shift that is 7 to 3. He goes, but let me explain something to you. You can't be late. And I'm like, who the fuck drinks at 7? Like, in my mind, who the fuck drinks at 7? So I would have Monday nights from 5 to 2 or 5 to 3, and then Wednesdays I'd have to go to Union City and open the bar at 7 and stay there till 3. First day I was fucking late. What do I give a fuck?
So then he had you open the bar?
At 7.
7 in the morning.
When I got there. Right. There was 30 fucking people there ready to kill me. Okay, I never saw that before, Jeff. I never saw that before.
How late were you, like 20 minutes, 30 minutes?
I was maybe 15 minutes late. Oh. I had to set the alarms up. I went inside. When I came out, they were all at the bar looking at me like they were going to kill me. And they all would do two shots of whiskey or scotch or something strong with a beer back or a water back or no ice. These were real people. This was not, hi, happy Valentine. No. These are people that while they go to get the drink, they don't want you looking at them because the hand would shake as they were going to get the drink. And then they put it down and you give them another shot and they put that down and they take a beer and fucking drink that and get on the bus to New York. That's the way their life is.
This is just to keep them sane.
This is just to get the party started, to get them on that bus. Two shots at 7 in the fucking morning. I never saw that before in my life. At 17, I was like, wow, I get it now.
But yeah.
And they were all great tippers. So you made $50 by 7:30. A couple scragglers walked in, same thing. Whiskey on, let me get two. Boom, a beer. Out. It was something that I had never seen before. My mom drank. She had friends that drank. But I didn't know who the fuck went into a bar at 7 a.m. just to get the day started.
And just that you're 17 years old and you're serving people in a bar. This is just crazy.
Listen, and then you would add up the tabs for the night. And what you had to do was put them in a regular envelope and put them in the top shelf in the refrigerator. Okay? So I went and bought the same envelopes And I would go in there at 4 o'clock in the morning. Like, I would go into the city and snort coke with my friend and go to, like, a rock concert or something. On the way back, I go, take your time, because I got to stop at the bar and make a quick withdrawal. My ATM machine, I called it. That was my first ATM machine. And I would go over there in the middle of the night. I rip open the envelope, take 200 out, put the rest in, and put the date on it. And he would blame it on the girl before me. Only the girl that before me, I grew up with it. So one day, like, a boyfriend came to me and goes, you got to stop robbing that place. They're blaming it on my fucking girlfriend.
You know what? I got to say, Brian did us a favor there. That
was good stuff.
That's a pretty good story. That's just Joey Diaz, though. I mean, people have got to listen to this guy. He's the same. Do we got Kelvin? Is KG calling?
No, 2 Pound.
Oh, 2 Pound's going to call in?
Stevie 2 Pound Forbes, former IBF junior lightweight champ, season 2 of The Contender.
I watched that. Was that season 2 or season 1?
I believe it was season 2.
Was it season 2?
Yeah, he got all the way to the finals.
He was supposed to win. He actually got upset.
Yeah, lost to Grady Brewer, who was 2 Pound was fighting out of his weight class to some degree. Grady Brewer was way two weight classes up, probably. So we actually went down for that. Me and Clayton flew down and watched that.
All right,
live.
Cool. Well, I've never met 2 Pound, so introduce me. Now that
absolutely.
You've introduced me, but then you got to take the conversation. I don't really know where to go with it, but he's back in town. He's back in. All right, you know what? Let's do this with him.
Yeah.
So Brian had a lot to drop on. Brian's such a good guest.
He is.
He's just so
good
fun
dude.
To talk to. I was telling you something about James Comey, the FBI director in front of the Senate. I see 2 Pound calling in. I hope we have time. I want to wrap that thought up. If not, I'll have to remember to do it next week. But Justin, if you'll connect us. We got 2 Pound Steve Forbes, Portland's own. Most of you guys know him. Most of you probably know him as most famous moment was fighting Oscar De La Hoya, but that's arguable because he was also on, I believe it was season 2, Jamie. That's what you were saying. Season 2 of The Contender.
Season 2 of The Contender.
Yep. Made it all the way to the finals. Was supposed to win. He was actually upset. He was supposed to win that whole thing. I learned about him through that show, but then it turned out that you used to work with him. Clayton used to work with him. He moved away. We lost him in Portland. He moved out to Vegas for a bit, but he's back. 2 Pound. What's happening? And with that, the world's quickest interview. Justin, will you disconnect? 2 Pound will have to call back in. He's either got mute hit on his phone or we've got some kind of a technical issue. Jamie, I could hear that he was there.
Huh.
I could hear the phone. We didn't just have a dead air, but let's have 2 Pound call back in. In the meanwhile, what is he up to now that he's back in town? Is he getting a promotion going? I heard somewhere in the grapevine he might be getting like his own boxing promotion going.
Yeah, my conversation, we had a beer last time I was up here in Portland. He's getting ready to launch 2 Pound Sports and Entertainment. They want to do some boxing and some other things. He's got an interesting story. He came up with the Mayweathers, and he's gone thousands and thousands of rounds with Floyd. He's been coached by all three, Jeff, Roger, and Floyd Sr. He was out in Detroit for some time with Emmanuel Stewart. He's been there, done it, seen it. Definitely the royalty of Portland.
2 Pound, do we got you this time?
Hello?
Hey, 2 Pound, we got you a little bit. Are you there?
No, this is Pico.
Aaron Pico, what's happening, buddy?
Hey, Chad, how's it going?
Hey, we're doing really good. We had a couple of people that were going to call in, and here you are. I think we're late. Joel, I believe, set this up. Joel is no longer with us, so I didn't know. I would have been on time, my friend. Accept my apology. How are you, Aaron?
I'm good.
Hey,
everything's good. They said 12:30, so called in. I wasn't going through, but now I went through. So
all right.
Good.
Well,
everything's well.
Hey, I'm thrilled to have you. Give me an update. Did you finally get an opponent? Did you finally find a dance partner for June 24th for the big Bellator show?
I did. His name is Zach Freeman. He's 8-2. A little bit older. He's got some experience, but he's a tough fighter. And that was my. I didn't want to fight a guy like I said 1-2 or, you know, like a. Better terms, a tomato can. I want it to be a good fight. I know what I'm capable of doing. He's a veteran. He's had some experience, but I know what I'm capable of doing. I'm excited to be playing for it.
Yeah, well, Aaron, if you were looking for a tough fight, you found one because Zach Freeman is the real deal. Yeah, he's been in there, what, 10 times? 8-2, I think you stated his record. He is a tough guy. And if he stepped to
the
challenge, man, he's got my respect. Hey, did you follow the National Open? I was so disappointed that you weren't there in that weight class, but did you follow that?
I did. I was I was I saw 65. I saw all the weight classes. I was checking to see how everybody did. But he has a great tournament. At 65, it was Jordan Oliver, 70, James Green. David Taylor ran through everybody. Burroughs had some tough matches. But, yeah, I was following the tweets and the updates. Looked like a great tournament.
David Taylor is quite possibly this season the wrestler of the year. I mean, you saw what he did at the World Cup, but then what he did at the National Open, running through it, as you said, I mean, making it look easy. Tech falls in the quarters. Tech falls in the semis, running over the guy. A very tough opponent in the finals, made it look easy. I mean, I think overall, right now, I put him in front of Dakin Burroughs. I think he's the overall best, and I realize what the series history is. I get all of the backstory. David Taylor is my argument. I think he should have been O-Dub.
I think so. I think David Taylor, I mean, moving up to 84 kilograms, I know he's working with my strength and conditioning coach and nutritionist, Sam Calavita, and they really put a lot of work in with conditioning. And moving him up to 84 kilo the right way, I know it's taking some time to put the size on, but man, he's really turned the corner. Like as far as 84, really fitting that weight class, and he's just destroying everybody. And his conditioning is through the roof. I'm the same conditioning as him, and it's no joke, that's for sure.
So, you know, when you look at you look at that weight class and the guys that you competed with, but let's just go to the bronze medalist, Zane Rutherford. You guys have had two matches. You got a combined score off the top of my head of 14-1. I believe one match was 7-0 and one match was 7-1.
No, I wrestled him six times.
You wrestled Zane more than the junior trials in the other match? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I wrestled him six times. Yeah, 6-0 against him.
So when you watch a guy like him that comes in and gets third and arguably could have won, I mean, right, you saw the match he had with Oliver, very close. He on any given day could have won it. And you're 6-0 against him. I mean, do you have any regrets that you didn't enter the tournament?
No, I really don't. Honestly, Chael, I love wrestling, and of course it's always a great time at the U.S. Open, but I'm having such a blast right now just doing all the disciplines MMA requires, the boxing, the jiu-jitsu, the overall MMA training and kickboxing. I'm having a great time. I'm still wrestling, getting my wrestling practices in, but I'm enjoying this journey right now, this new journey, this MMA.
Now, I know you're going to do awesome, Aaron. I know you're going to have huge levels of success and get driven up the ranks and have a lot of fun with the promotion behind you. In 2020, though, if we can just fast forward, will you be trying out for the Olympic team in wrestling?
I don't know. Honestly, I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, we'll see how the MMA is going. I know I'm going to do great, but I don't know. Only time can tell. I know I'm going to be a great athlete. I know I'm going to be in great shape and keeping my body healthy. That's the main thing. And we'll see when 2020 comes around. But, like I said, I'm just taking it one day at a time, doing what I need to do as far as June 24th, taking it step by step. But the main most important thing to me is staying healthy, keeping your head sharp as far as athletically and just living every day like a, you know, the right way, and we'll see how it goes 2020.
Hey, I get that answer completely, and I appreciate your candidness on this, and I do agree with you that you need to focus, and right now your next match is a mixed martial arts contest. But I was just wondering, because, you know, there was no big announcement of retirement, you never left the shoes on the mat, and so many people just thought this is going to be the next 12 years of your life until you're, you know, 30, 32 years old. You would be wrestling, but there's a possibility then. I don't want to put words in your mouth. I'm just saying how I interpreted what you just said. There is a possibility that your rest of your athletic career is going to be in mixed martial arts. We might not see you wrestle again.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. We'll see. I mean, like I said, with MMA, the sport is evolving so much. It's like, it's crazy to like do another 4 years and not do any MMA training, and it's going to be kind of tough to be 24 years old and going against guys that have been, you know, have some more years on you as far as training. It's like this sport is evolving and getting so crazy. It's like you have to, in a few more years, you're going to have to start young to just want to be able to compete. So we'll see. I got a lot to learn in the MMA. It's coming along really nicely, but I guess that the main thing is just staying healthy, keeping in shape, doing what you have to do, and living every day the right way. And if that's all intact, we'll see.
And where are you training at? What is your home gym?
Well, right now I'm kind of just like, I'm doing my jiu-jitsu with Eddie Bravo. My coach and I, Dominic, are, you know, doing a lot of boxing sparring at Wild Card. And then there's some gyms around that we go to. I know TJ Dillashaw, Juan Archuleta, they have some guys that we're going to be doing some MMA sparring with, and kind of just going wherever I need to go to do the best, get the best training in. I don't really have like a set gym where I belong to. I kind of go work my disciplines where the best guys are, and we go from there.
Okay.
But Bob Cook has been coming down. He's actually coming down Thursday. He stays with me like Thursday through Sunday every week. And he's my MMA coach, so he's been keeping an eye on me, watching me, and making sure we're doing all the right things.
So he will be your head corner man then on June 24th?
Yes.
All right.
Bob will.
Well, you're in good hands. You're in very good hands with Bob Cook. So I'm glad you're sticking with that. I've got updates on your career from the time that Bellator announced, which was almost 2 years ago, where they announced that they had you under contract, maybe more like 20 months. I've been getting updates from Bob. He only has great things to hear, but with that connection, I had assumed that you were at the AKA. So, but then you mentioned Sam Calvita, who I know is more in the L.A. Orange County area, so that's what made me ask that question.
No, like I said, Bob's the head guy, but I'm not at AKA. I mean, I go up there occasionally to work on a few things and do what I have to do, but my family's here in Southern California. I've got a lot of good stuff down here, so I feel comfortable being down here.
All right, very good. And let me ask you one last wrestling question to satisfy my own curiosity. But Rhys Humphrey was at the Open. Rhys Humphrey is still an active competitor, but Rhys Humphrey did not enter the Open. Why? Was he hurt?
I don't know. That's a good question. Honestly, I don't know. I know he's coaching at San Marino. He's one of the coaches. There's a local school down here with the Titan Mercury Wrestling Club. I think he's just enjoying life here in Southern California. I haven't talked to him, but he has his youth club. He's coaching a high school. He's with his family. He has two kids, so I think he's just enjoying life and maybe just taking some time off.
You know, Aaron, this isn't a question as much as a statement, but I want to make this to you as two wrestlers. One guy that I felt was slighted, possibly the best performance of the whole Open. And whenever somebody talks about that, was it Burroughs or was it Taylor? That's the conversation. You want to know, there's another guy that did not get his due that was also in Vegas, and largely because it was Greco-Roman, but it was Mason Manville. Mason Manville, at very young, I think he's 19 right now. If I'm wrong, he's 20, but I'm pretty sure he's 19. Mason Manville entered one of the hardest Greco-Roman weights with Kamal Bey, John J. Chavez, came out on top in a huge upset and did it as a, you know, he's had some Greco-Roman, but he's a world champion in freestyle. I thought that Mason Manville needed to be in the discussion for the single best performance of the weekend. I would give that it either goes to Taylor or Burroughs. But I think that Manville needs to be in that discussion. Would you disagree?
No, making a world team. He's made a world team at 19, correct, for Greco?
Correct, right? Yes. In a weight class, an upset
crazy
over Kamal Bey.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's a big accomplishment. I know Mason has been at the training center working on his Greco for quite some time now to see him to make a team. That's a big step just to say, you know what, I'm going to go try to make the Greco team. And I know he moved out to the training center for a little bit and he was training over there with those guys. And to see him win the U.S. Open and go to the World Championships, that's pretty cool. And I'm sure he's committed to Penn State, right, Taylor? He's going to go to Penn State, I believe, right? Or is he just taking some time to do some Greco and then go to Penn State?
Well, okay, so here,
if I'm wrong.
You know what? So I think I do have to correct you. So I was never getting an update. I thought he went out to the OTC, was not starting his college clock. I know that was Matt Lindland's original plan with him when he sat down with his parents in his living room. However, Aaron, when he wrestled, he represented the WCAP. So if he went into the Army, then no, he can't get. He's in the Army for what's the minimum commitment you can make? 4 years, and you could
four
do
years.
More. But yeah, minimum's 4 years. So no, I think he's going to stick with Greco. He's done with freestyle. I'm going to make that assumption, and he's going to forego NCAA. Now, military commitment would halt your NCAA clock. But I don't think so. You know, I think he's just going to be a professional wrestler and pursue a World Olympic medals and stay in the military. That's my guess. But when I saw him come out and he was with the W cap, that was very telling for me because I didn't know he had made that kind of commitment. So, no, I'm going to say no. He is not going to Penn State. And if he does, he can't go for another 4 years.
Dan, that's very interesting. I didn't know that. Well, honestly, if I really look at it, like the WCAP program is a really good program for wrestlers. And if you want to be a lifer in wrestling and you're a really good wrestler, I believe WCAP is a great program. Be in the military, you get to travel the world. Be in the military and just wrestle and focus on. I'm sure they pay for your housing and do everything like that, and you can stay there for years and be a high rank, I believe, and that's pretty cool just to be able to wrestle and do what you love. That so I'm actually kind of happy to hear that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, both of the Saraki boys went military, one into Army, one into Air Force, but they went in right out of high school, so they were literally professional wrestlers. All they had to do was show up and report to practice every day, go to tournaments on the weekends. They wrestled until 38, 20 years in the military, full retirement at 38. So, yes, to your point, if you're good enough to do it, it's an excellent avenue to pursue your dreams.
Yeah, absolutely. That's pretty cool. I did not know that. Learned something new. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm glad that you agree with me, and I'm glad that as a freestyle stud, which you are, that you did pay some attention to the Greco, because there are guys over there that can really come back from overseas and bring medals home for the country, and Manville's one of them. I mean, that's a guy that's already done it. He did it in the cadets, but he's a winner, man. He left the cadets early. He won the gold medal, changed his flight, flew into Fargo, was completely hungover from jet lag, and won Fargo. So, I mean,
he's
a competitor.
For sure.
Yeah, that's a tough guy right there. There's no way around it. All right, listen, you are fighting on June 24th, Bellator 180, live from Madison Square Garden, making your debut. You're long-awaited. They signed the Fab Five of wrestlers, but you're the only one that has not actually gotten in there and competed yet, and you're the star of the bunch, man. You're the one everybody's wanted to see. I wish you nothing but the best. Do you have anything else you want to get off your chest, Aaron?
No, thank you, Chad, for having me on. And to all the listeners, make sure you tune in June 24th pay per view. It's going to be a great card, and I'm really excited to show what I can do.
I can't wait to see it. I will be out there as well. We'll catch up out there. Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you, Joe.
All right, Aaron Pico. Jamie, I don't know if you're familiar with him.
I'm not. No, wrestler, obviously.
Yeah, so Aaron Pico is without question the biggest star on the horizon. He is one of the most fantastic wrestlers I've ever seen.
Wow.
And he wrestled some high school and never lost, won everything you could possibly win, national levels, went off to the world championships, won the world championship at 15 years old for the cadets, went into the juniors, lost to the guy, went on to be Olympic champion in the finals, brought home a medal there. This Zane Rutherford, who he is 6-0 against, Zane was awarded the Hodge Trophy this year as the best all-around NCAA athlete that there is. He's never beat Aaron Pico, but Aaron Pico did not go into the NCAA. He took a different route and tried to make an Olympic team. He made it all the way to the final wrestle-off. It was one apiece. It's the best of three. It was one apiece against Frank Molinaro. In the final match, it was tied 4-4, and they went to criteria, and Pico did not get to go. But he accomplished all of the things I just said at 19 years old. Now, the backstory on him is he was a Golden Gloves boxer as a kid, and then he also got involved, and this, nobody really knows about this.
Where is he from?
California. He got tied up in some kind of pancration. Pancration is what we now call MMA. I have no idea why we renamed it MMA, because it's actually a sport of pancration that was even in the Olympic Games. In 1904, they removed it from the Olympic Games, but they kept aspects such as Taekwondo, such as boxing, such as freestyle and Greco-Roman wrestling. But when you combine all of those, you have the sport of pancration, which now they call MMA. I don't know how 100 years later you can rename a sport that's preceded you by a century to call it MMA, but what we know as MMA is actually the sport of pancration. So at any rate, he got involved in a pancration circuit that still exists in Europe and is contested all the way to a championship, and he won that twice. He's never done MMA, but the reality is, well, he has. They just called it pancration, and he won it. Golden Gloves boxer, one of the finest wrestlers in the world. Well, multiple world medals.
And he's still young.
And he's 19.
Jeez.
So he's making his Bellator debut. Now he's got to go take, he's taking on a stud. Zach's a stud.
Zach?
Yeah, Zach Freeman.
Okay.
He's a stud.
Now Zach's been around a while. He's got a, solid. So Aaron Pico's first fight in MMA is in Bellator against the guy that's already been in there and has got experience.
Against a veteran. Now, in many ways, Zach should beat him. Zach's been in there 10 times. Zach's an absolute stud. The thing with Pico, though, and Bellator knew, look, we want to give him a guy that's 0-0. We want to give him a guy that's 1-0 because they got to get it cleared through a commission. They had to get special approval from the commission to make a match with a guy with zero fights versus a guy with 10 fights. And they just, Bellator just had to come clean with the commission and go, look, this guy's resume, this guy's future is so bright, the reputation around this guy, we can't get anyone to fight him. The only guy that said yes is Zach Freeman. We understand he's got more experience, but please give some latitude to Aaron's background in pancration and boxing and his success in wrestling. So when I tell you that this guy is the diamond of the bunch, I don't oversell him at all. He is the real McCoy, and he has been his whole life. I mean,
he sounds like the Lomachenko of MMA.
Yeah.
Because Lomachenko just walked in and just started fighting for world titles in his second fight. And this kid obviously is young and a Golden Gloves boxer. And that type of Olympic pedigree, that's a problem.
He's a big problem, and he's in shape, and he's a competitor. He understands round systems. Wow. He understands a 10-9. He understands how to get his hand raised. I mean, he's just a winner.
Now, I'm excited. I'm definitely going to pay attention to this guy. Now.
Yeah, he had a personal coach that came in. I think the guy was Russian, but he was some kind of Eastern Bloc, a personal coach since he was a boy that was around him at all times that oversaw everything from what he ate to how much he slept to when he trained. I mean, this guy has led a real life of discipline. And then, on top of everything, as you could hear, he's a nice person. And yeah. Those things don't
he's
always
humble.
Go together.
Yeah.
A lot of times you get a guy that's a bit of a jerk, or you meet him, you go, doggone it. You know, I really wanted to cheer for you, but I can't. He's just a really nice person. And, you know, they talk about who the best wrestler is all the time, and they have to defer to the NCAA. But he has NCAA eligibility right now in that, with his age. His clock has not started. He could go in right now and have 4 years. He beat the guy that won it 6 times, but he did not go NCAA. He signed with Bellator instead. So there's always this regret. He could get a full ride anywhere right now. Any deal he wanted. If he said, look, I don't even want to wrestle. I want a full ride, and I'll show up to the conference tournament in the NCAA meet. I'm going to wrestle 10 matches a year, and you're going to pay for my education. Any coach in the country says, yes, I'll take the deal right now. You never have to do a dual meet. You don't have to come to a practice. You don't have to travel. You put a singlet on the last 2 weeks of the season, I'll pay for your whole education right now. I can't think of another guy that I could say that about. I don't think there could be another guy that could make demands like that. He wouldn't make those demands. I'm just trying to illustrate for you. He's that level of athletic talent and that level of a competitor. He will go as hard as it takes, as long as it takes. He will walk through fire to get his hand raised. And that's just a big guy to deal with. And Zach Freeman's a rough guy, too. I'm not making a prediction here. I'm just sharing with you because he's an unknown name. Who he is, that's who he is.
You know, this speaks to the sport and how quick it's evolving. You know, you guys went in with certain skill sets. Now you got a guy that's multi-talented at that level, at that age. I mean, it's going to continue. You know, in our era coming up, it was guys that this guy's a boxer, this guy's a wrestler, this guy's a this guy's a that, and he learned some other things. Now you got these young guys coming up that are doing it all at the same time. Man, what is this sport going to look like in 10 years, 5 years, 2 years?
So we got a little egg on our face a minute ago. We set up 2 pound Steve Forbes.
Yeah.
we introduced him to the audience.
Yeah.
Hit the line was hot. Introduced Aaron Pico as Steve Forbes.
And I think they were calling in at the same time.
Is that what happened?
I think so, and so they were getting busy signals.
Okay, so Joel had lined up Pico. I didn't know he was coming on. I tried to get Pico a week ago. I didn't even know Joel had his contact form, so he lined up Pico. I didn't know Aaron was calling in.
Yeah.
It is the point I'm trying to make as to why we had that unprofessionalism down here at a professional podcast. That was on me. But we owe Forbes a interview. So is he free right now, or
well,
should we reschedule
so
for next
I
week?
Just got a text from him. He's on the way to a casino.
Whatever niceness he's telling you, that means I've given up on you
but,
guys.
But he wants to reschedule.
Okay.
So We want to get him
so
on.
So we'll have two. We've introduced him. We'll have 2 Pound. He'll come on. He'll have to come on next week. You'll have to call in too. Help me with the interview.
Would love to. Absolutely.
So there you go. What else do we got? You know, I had a Comey thought. I'm going to have to come back to that. You know what? I'll do it real quickly here. So Comey went before the Senate and he testified, and I thought the whole thing was interesting. I thought the performance was very good, but it does come back to the lack of power, lack of respect that the U.S. Congress has. So they bring in James Comey, they ask him questions, and Comey did get out of several questions by saying, you know, well, I did what I thought was best for the American people. I did what, and he kept saying he's doing what's best for the American people. And nobody in that Senate hearing was smart enough or knew to stop him and say, you don't answer to the American people. You, as the head of the FBI, and as much as you want to make believe you were put in there by the people, you were not. You were not elected. You were appointed. We, however, were elected, and we are your oversight. We are your ultimate oversight. We answer to the American people, and you answer to us. So when a senator would ask him a question, and he would defer by bringing up this whole American people, and nobody corrected him, I thought that that was peculiar. Hey, do you guys not know how this works? You are the oversight. You are the oversight of the FBI. But Comey took control of this room, and he told them what questions he was going to answer, what questions he was not going to answer, and what questions he would only answer in a classified setting. They are the oversight. They decide what is going to be classified. They decide what he does. They decide when he punches in and punches out. They decide if he has a job tomorrow, and they decide how much that job gets paid. They allowed him to dictate to them, which I thought was interesting. Not deciding if that's right or wrong, but I thought it was interesting. And when Comey kept deferring and talking about what was best for the American people, that is not your job. And since the Senate isn't smart enough to tell you that, I will. They are your oversight. You answer to the United States Senate. And if the United States Senate asks him something that he says he can only answer in a classified situation, it makes me wonder, first off, is that true? And second off, then why did that senator ask that? Is that senator not smart enough to understand that the question that he just asked and the can of worms that he is about to get opened through that answer of their FBI director is so classified that it can't be done in that setting? Why was the question asked in the first place? And I just thought that once again, we were shown the weakness of the United States Congress, the weakness of the Senate. They are your oversight. James Comey does not answer to you and I, the taxpayer and the constituent. The Senate does, and they answer to him, and that is why we elected them. That is one of their several duties, is to have oversight of government agencies such as the FBI. I thought that was a cop-out. I thought it was weak. I thought that Comey won that. Comey shows up all by himself. He's got 100 senators in there. They should have been able to get the best of them, and they couldn't. And earlier I was talking about the Hillary Clinton email scandal.
Oh, man.
I never got that from Jump Street. I don't get that today. But they brought that up to Comey, and Comey's answer, this actually happened on Wednesday, but I had to catch up on my DVR on this. His answer several times, the reason that he went to Congress and said he was going to open an investigation and went back and forth on this was for the American people. And they should have shut him off right there. You don't answer. And you don't represent, and you were not elected by the American people. We were, and you answer to us, and we are your boss. And the shoe was put on the other foot. Comey came in and took charge of that room from the jump, and it was like every senator was scared of him. And it reminded me of the J. Edgar Hoover days, where he was in charge and started the FBI, and the very first thing he did was investigate absolutely every senator and congressman there was, and they were all scared to death to ever puff up against him because he had the goods. He had surveillance, he had videos, he had pictures, he knew about the girls that weren't their wives, that they were taken into hotel rooms, and it didn't matter what city in this country it was, Hoover had them, and that's how he got his power. And I'm looking at these guys and going, every one of you is backing down to your own subordinate. And as much as he wanted to present that he represents the people, I'll set the record straight that he does not. He was not elected. He was appointed, and it is his responsibility to answer to the ultimate government oversight, which is the United States Senate. And instead, they were cowtailing to him. And I just thought that that was peculiar. And I thought for anybody that watched that, that didn't understand who controlled that room versus who had the power to control that room, I'll bring it to your attention. Senate came in second to Comey, 100 against one, and the one man beat them all. Wow. And that was peculiar. And why should be the bigger question. Why was he able to say, I can only answer that in a classified setting? I am your boss. I am the oversight that was elected by the people, and given power through all of the executive branches, including the Supreme Court. And I just asked you to answer the question now. You got to answer that question. You're either under oath or you're not. And I found that to be very peculiar. To finish the Hillary thought with the emails, what has been troubling for me, and I've heard both sides of it, and I'm just on hers. I've heard both sides, but I'm on hers. And some of that could be from my lack of understanding national defense, because I've had people on that I really respect, including Marcus Luttrell, that said, look, this is wrong what she did, and she put lives in jeopardy. So I will admit,
I mean, bleach bit right there, yeah, one word.
I will admit that I don't come in fully armed. I just, as a human, as a guy that has multiple devices, and I have multiple emails, and it's fine and legal for me to do, when she gets sworn in, all of a sudden she has to follow a different rule set. That is true that she does, and she admitted that. But for me, I was just able to relate to it and go, I get it. Yeah, I fully get it. Whatever. Let's correct that. Let's not do it again. But I get it. Here's the point I want to make, though. And here's where it was unfair. They investigated her. It did cost her the election. That's true. They investigated her. And the second that election was done, Jamie, I've never heard about her emails again.
Yeah, charges, no, I agree with you. Yeah.
Charges were never brought.
They were, and Donald Trump was saying that that was one of the things he was going to do. And I believe that that made people... Part of the reason, you know, people are we talked about the fight game the other day, and you said that the reason that it works is it's conflict with immediate result. And that's the problem with this government is there's never you get a promise that, hey, you know what? This was corruption. It's blatantly obvious. There's a server in a pizza parlor somewhere. Right. There's a conflict, but there's never any resolution.
Sure, and then 33,000 are deleted. That was the big problem.
And
for
not
her.
Just deleted, but specifically somebody went in there with a program called Bleach Bit that erased it to the point where you'll never see it again.
Where even a forensic person at the FBI could not recover.
I mean, come on.
Look, that was bad. I fully agree. This was a problem for her, and she wasn't totally innocent. Oh, I will agree.
Has she ever been, though? I mean, at this point, you can't give somebody like that the benefit of the doubt. Well, there's a track record of constant corruption with those people.
And that is what was decided at the ballot. That is true. But it's also true when I make the point that this was such a phenomenon and such a big deal, but nothing after Election Day has been done. The FBI mm-hmm. did not bring charges. In fact, they cleared her. When Trey Gowdy and Chavez and Jordan were all going after her, and the other two that were completely unprepared in the Benghazi hearings went after her. The second the election was done, that's never been spoke of since, and she yeah. was not charged. And it does make you look back and go, okay, we got gamed here.
There when everybody's hands are dirty, sometimes maybe it's just best they all just quietly walk away, right?
That's what they decided to do, but I think in hindsight, when she comes out and says I was treated unfairly, she has a fair point. And she said days before the election, when Comey came out and was open investigation, she said this, and I'm quoting, she said, if you've got something, bring it forward. And she challenged him on the spot. No more investigations. You've been investigating this 18 months. If you got something to say, say it. And if you got an action you want to take, take the action. Because today's Sunday, and the ballots are on Tuesday. Let's resolve this now.
Is it possible she had dirt on somebody else and she says, hey, you want to throw this on me, I'll throw it on you. And then she stood up there and said, take your best shot.
All of those things are possible.
And the person that was responsible for calling her out on it said, you know what, let's just walk away from this situation.
All of those things are absolutely
possible. I think they're all dirty
behind
the
scenes. But I guess the point I'm trying to make to you is she called him out right then. She's like, the clock is ticking and I have no time. And even I, as the leader in the polls, am cognitive enough of the situation that somebody to be elected president while under FBI investigation is very unlikely. So what in the hell is going on here? My hands are clean. I turned it over. I made a mistake, but it's not criminal. She said that. Time has shown that she's correct. Whatever side you want to end up on this, they did an investigation and nothing has been spoken of since. So when she comes out as the wounded duck and says, poor me, well, she was a wounded duck. we were fleeced a little bit in that. And who's was at fault and was that their intent? I don't know. But for the Senate to have the FBI and director there, and every time they ask a tough question, he agrees to only answer it in a classified setting, what in the hell does that mean? That means I'm not going to answer the question unless it's classified, meaning you can't reveal what my answer is? Well, then it's very hard to pin you down on any wrongdoing if you don't have to answer any tough questions unless you're in a setting where the answer to that question can never be spoken of again and held against you in a trial. So I just thought that was a little bit disappointing, and it was the Senate's job, 100-1, as the oversight.
And the alpha male walks away.
That's right. They should have overseen their subordinate. Instead, he walked into the room.
He controlled
the narrative, yeah. And he got up and walked out. And, I mean, again, it was a great performance by Comey, but it was a misdirection of the way the government set up by the Senate.
Yeah,
Comey
well,
kept saying he was answering to the American people. No, you don't.
Those guys don't get those jobs unless
That's right.
they know how to control the narrative.
Your name's never been on a ballot. The American people were never given a choice. And in return, you don't owe to us, but you do owe to the Senate who owes to us, whose name does go on a ballot. And the shoe got put on the other foot, and it was brilliant job by Comey. But once again, it just showed the weakness, the absolute weakness of the Senate and the Congress. And these guys, you know, they want to come to the president. And it doesn't matter if it's Trump. Obama didn't have to go through this, but Bill Clinton did. Both George Bushes had to go through it, where before there could be a military action by the commander-in-chief, meaning the president, they want to have a say. It's like, guys, you don't get a say because we don't respect you. You can't even rein in your own FBI director. You let him come in and falsely tell you that he answers to the American people. Does not one person in this room understand that that's not true? He does not answer to the American people. We do not get to vote for him, and we did not appoint or elect him. You guys are his boss. By law, absolute law, you guys are the ultimate oversight of that bureau.
And that's
so oversee the bureau, gentlemen.
And that is exactly what happens when government gets too big.
Do we got anything else to talk about? We've been rambling, but it's been so nice to have you down here this week, and I've been taking full advantage of it. I've exploited
it's
you.
It's been fun.
I made you look bad to 2 Pound. I apologize.
No. He was
we'll
good.
Make that right
yeah.
with him.
Yeah,
all right.
Absolutely.
All right, everybody. For Coach Jamie, I'm Chael Sonnen. Until next time, you're welcome.
Thanks for listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
This is Norman Lear with my great sidekick, Paul Hipp.
Good to be here with you, Norman, on All of the Above.
That's the name of my podcast, All of the Above. And it's called All of the Above because we're going to talk about all of the above. There isn't anything sacrosanct.
There's nothing too above us or below us.
Or below us. Well, certainly nothing too below us. But we have had guests you cannot believe.
Yeah.
Guests.
Julie Louis-Dreyfus, amazing.
Yes. And America Ferrera.
Jared Carmichael.
Yes. Oh, Amy Poehler. How did we overlook? We didn't overlook Amy Poehler. I was saving her for last. And Charles Barkley, I was saving him for first, actually, because I didn't declare up first.
I get to hang out with this guy. And this is your chance to hang out with Norman Lear a little bit here and some of these great guests.
God, I wish I was you hanging out with Norman Lear.
Yeah.
Son of a gun.
See?
That must be exciting.
It's the best. Oh. I'm telling you.
Don't miss All of the Above with Norman Lear. Download new episodes every week on the Podcast One app or subscribe at podcastone.com.